Action Park Media.
All right, welcome to Victory the Podcast. I'm Doug Allen.
Kevin Connolly.
So we're going to be talking season 8.
Season 4, episode 8, Gary's Desk.
And guess what?
What?
I mean, we've talked, we've delayed this for various reasons for days. And Dylan honestly hates this episode so much. He doesn't want to talk about it.
Right.
I think something happened with Busey.
I will say we've been dreading this episode because, I just remember that our storyline was kind of weak. But there's some good stuff in that episode. It's definitely worth unpacking.
There's some really good stuff, actually, in the episode. I didn't realize. And, credits, I guess some people want us to give us, professional podcasters. Season 4, Episode 8.
Gary's Desk.
By Ali Musica.
Yep.
Directed by Julian Farrino.
Thank God he directed this episode. But that's we're going to get into that. We got some... What? What, you don't think that for an episode that I thought we were going to hate, I thought it had a little style to it. And I think, thank God, it was a director that with some style.
My argument of this, which I find interesting and debatable, and everyone could talk about it. And we do know that we had, Mylod, one of the best directors in the business, who's got The Menu out right now, and it does Succession and Shameless and
first tier guy.
Yeah, but I mean, a genius, a visual genius, and a storytelling genius. But at the end of the day, to me, the best episodes are always the best scripts in television. And our episodes, this script was definitely not our best ever. And by the way, that's not Ali, because we all,
of course,
we all
you're just as much at fault for that one.
Yeah, well, I don't, I didn't even mean she's at fault at all. I mean, there's, this is a way it goes down, and how this storyline came about, I cannot even imagine. It's so bizarre, and it feels like one of those things. And I'm only talking the Gary's Desk thing, because I actually think the Sklar Brothers stuff is hilarious.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I forgot about all that stuff. I forgot about taking out the ads and all that kind of stuff. But let's cover some house business first. The JSX Queens Boulevard Film Festival. So here at APM, we have narrowed it down to 5 finalists. So we have 5 finalists. We are going to email these finalists, and then we're going to narrow it down to 3. Does it sound weird that if you get an email and then you don't make the top 3, or should we just email the winners?
No, they give
email
them
the finalists.
Yeah, they want to know they're in the finals.
Okay. All right, so we're going to email the 5 finalists, and then Doug, me, you, Jerry, Dylan, and the CEO of JSX, Alex Wilcox, will vote. And then we're going to have a winner and 2 honorable mentions. So it's going to be fun.
And the winner's going to be flown out here on JSX.
JSX,
provided they're in a JSX flight.
JSX place. But yeah, JSX is going to give them they'll get a flight somewhere.
And
hopefully here.
Speaking of JSX and semen retention, by the way, I mean, I just have to bring this up. I mean, Adrian, I've got 100 people sending me this video of him on a podcast.
I got to say, I got that a lot.
I mean, honestly, 100 people sent it to me. And by the way, I'm not even judging him. Maybe if I was a younger man, I would decide that I need to retain my semen, but clearly I didn't retain it, and I now have a baby.
Semen retention.
I mean, I'm being very serious, because a couple of things are.
I just don't have the context for what he's talking about. I just saw a clip. I didn't listen to the whole podcast.
Well, I didn't listen to the whole podcast either. Don't shame me.
Yes,
but
you did.
I mean, I think
you wanted to hear all about his semen retention.
I think what it is like to deprive yourself of
Well, I know. I
of
mean,
an
listen,
orgasm
buddy, I can put,
for a
I
can, long time.
I can add 1+1.
Well, that's
I know what
it I
means,
did.
But I don't know what the context.
The context
for the
was semen he I think kind of had a porn addiction. I think he was saying, and I don't want to spread the wrong message, because I did just watch the clip. But I think I think that he
went through a point where he said, "I'm going to be celibate."
And then,
semen retention.
But what he says is when you.
But that's what they clip, right? That's like that's. I don't want to say it's clickbaity, but
that's
the
it.
Clip. I did. But no, I didn't even... I didn't click it. I got a million people sent to me.
You couldn't even retain yourself from watching it. But anyway, I guess you don't come for a week, a month, a year. I have no idea. And
is
then,
it like Sober October?
I mean...
But with semen?
By the way, we have Gary Goldman, a producer, assistant director, extraordinaire.
Who also knows Adrian for 1,000 years.
Who's also retained semen, right?
Gary has not retained all the semen. He's got kids. Gary's got kids out there in the universe, so clearly his semen has not been
boxers,
retained.
Boxers,
before a big fight,
Yeah,
right?
Before a fight, they...
retain their semen.
I don't even know if that's a thing anymore. I know it was like Raging Bull. I remember that when he puts his ice on his dick for.
Well, yeah, I don't. Again, we might be talking way out of school here. I don't know if it's true, but I think you're not supposed to. I think you're supposed to practice semen retention like a week or so leading up to a fight.
To a fight?
Yeah, makes you stronger. Right. Is that so what
do you think, so what do you think Adrian was doing it for? I mean, just to.
I don't know, but who knows? You know, he's listen, man. Say we Grenier has obviously been on some journey. You know, and
I'm not
and
saying I wanna, anything.
I, no, listen.
Speaking
when I say,
what happened,
we want to hear about it.
Yeah. So
what,
that
would you
being
be
said,
able to change, would you be able to be fair to Grenier in a, and if he came on the podcast about like semen
what
retention?
Am I fucking Mike Wallace? I mean, he's my friend and he's my brother. By the way, I'll retain semen to get him on the fucking podcast.
Should
I'm
we all
fine
retain our semen for a week leading up to his visit?
I was going to say I'll donate to him, but I'm not. I cannot have another kid out in the universe. But Adrian, we
would
spoke.
Would you retain your semen for 30 days?
Yeah, I could
a
do 30
day challenge.
At 55, I can do it. And especially with the baby in the house now, it's right. I think I have been retaining my semen, by the way. I mean, the challenge would be to like, will I ever have sex again? So I think that Adrian, that we spoke to the other day.
I just think we're going to have to hear, like, it's going to be a pretty intense podcast. I don't think it can be as comedy based as normal.
By the way, he can, you know, I know.
You're like, an open minded guy-ish.
Yeah, like you said, he went through a journey and, you know, he's said some things about the show that, you know, he looks at the world that he lived in back then as a different thing. Now me, who didn't live the life that any of you were living during the show, look at it very differently also, because I did nothing. I sat in the office and fucking worked all day while you guys partied.
Right,
so
but he's
no
also
regrets.
Not really just pointing it at the show either. He's like kind of taking responsibility for himself. He's not
like
pointing it at the show.
I don't think he pointed anything at the show. Yeah, he's like Mike Wallace. He keeps trying to like make it like
it's going to end up being like a semi-serious interview.
Let me
be
crystal clear.
And you're already talking semen retention.
That's what's on his plate. I mean, that's what he wants to promote.
Do you want to deep dive the semen retention on Victory?
I mean, sure. You know, I'd like to. You know, as Adrian once said to me, you know, you don't know what it's like to be a great looking guy.
No, that's not what, that's out of context. Yeah, that's out of, you said something to him first.
I said something, I wanted to do something to his hair.
No, you guys were arguing about, and you said, well, you don't know anything about like writing scripts you don't know anything about being good looking.
You are completely.
That's what it was.
By the way, that's a Kevin Connolly burn, not an Adrian Grenier. That is not even remotely close to what happened.
That's how I remember.
It was out of left. You weren't there. You only remember me telling you. That's not what happened. What happened was.
You said something snide first and he responded.
I said, I want to do something with your fucking hair. And he basically told me by the way, I had great hair back then. It wasn't about anything. It was like, you have no business telling me about my hair because you don't understand that all women want retained semen.
Oh,
so,
God, Jesus
so
Christ.
No, but I mean, it was out of left
you guys,
field.
You
if I would have said, you don't know a thing about
creative
scripts.
Discussion, and he was like, I think I'll look ridiculous. And you're like, well, I don't.
By the way, Gary, are you listening to Connolly? How confident he's now retelling the story when he actually made up a completely false narrative?
I'll get further. You know, Ferraro will remember this one.
None of you were there. It was in Adrian's trailer.
But
I walked in. I wanted to talk to him about his hair.
Said something along the lines of, you don't know anything about doing something, whether it was writing or directing.
That's my point.
And he said, and you don't know anything about being good looking.
Grenier is not a tit for tat type of guy.
He was that day.
So, Gary, Conley was not in the trailer.
But
I walked in the trailer.
I had my ear to the street, bro.
I believe I was on marching orders from Lev, because to be honest with you, I didn't really spend much time on Adrian's hair. I was much more about the fucking hat when he wore the wrong thing, or the sneakers, or wearing a watch.
It'll come to me. We'll have to bring
his chest
to
pop a little more.
We'll have to recap this on a later episode because you said something. But whatever. I'm not going to put words in your mouth.
By the way, this is like almost like when someone gets railroaded. I'm not even mad at Adrian for saying it, because what I was going to say before you went into a whole story, I've always been very happy with my looks, whatever they are, but Adrian's better looking than me. I'm not stupid. I fucking get it. Otherwise I would have played Vince, you know, right. But Adrian hit me with this out of nowhere. And it's not really like Adrian's style. He's not a guy that kind of busts on you or does that. That's why it was, Yeah, and that's why he's much nicer than Connolly. That's why Connolly is telling a story that would have happened if I said to Connolly, you don't know anything about scripts. And then Connolly said, you don't know anything about good looking. Listen, and then I'd go, listen,
you guys
you're all right looking. You ain't fucking Adrian. You
guys were over. You guys were arguing over a line of dialogue.
We were not arguing at all. You're arguing
right now. Are you going to argue with him when he comes on the podcast? That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, I'm just trying to set the scene. Wherever it were to happen, Austin. Here, there, Zoom, whatever. And you go into your thing. All right, welcome, Victor's Podcast, Doug Ellen, blah, blah, blah. Special guest, big episode. We got Adrian Grenier on the podcast. What's up, Adrian? Right? Are you prepared for anything?
Anything. I love it, by the way. If I can
deal
with Busey, I
could deal
with
anything. Are you going to control the tempo of the interview? Are you going to let it see? Are you going to let him take it where it may go?
Listen, I am not although some people find my voice silky and smooth, like Gary Beth David. Is that his name? Patrick Beth David?
Yeah.
Like in the middle of the podcast, he goes, God, you have the silkiest smooth voice, which made me feel really good. But I'm not a professional at this. I'm here. It's for fun. Right. I'll do the best I can. That's it. But I'm interested in hearing about Adrian. I love Adrian, and I am interested in hearing
I wonder. I wonder about your interview skills because you're going to be heading that one up.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you, oh, I'm the best interviewer.
No, I don't think. But I'm saying, are you just going to go with the flow? Or are we going to be talking about semen retention and all that stuff?
If he wants to talk semen retention, I will talk semen retention. What else can I tell you? I'll talk whatever Adrian wants to talk about. But
But I'm saying is, do we want to hear about the journeys or do we want to talk about the old times?
I want to talk about both, and right. I'll get him to talk about both, and I will get him to open up, and if you want him to fucking unretain semen in your fucking studio, I will get him to do it.
He's got so much to talk about. His lonely whale. And
that's what I'm saying.
New marriage. He was on a hit Netflix show. He's married. Yeah. Connolly, by the way. Somehow Connolly has turned this into like I am the mean guy.
No, not
the group.
That.
You're the bully, bro.
I don't think you're the mean guy of the group, but I think I can
do
let
you
a conversation
get stock tip
go anywhere.
I wasn't even gonna
mention semen retention on the pod. You brought it up right away. All right, but that's good.
Anyway,
it doesn't matter.
What I keep trying to say is we spoke to Adrian on a group text. He said he wants to do the podcast. We offered to fly him here. And then what I'm saying to you as the closer of this business. You need to now go, Adrian, can we please lock a date? And then you need to call JSX and say, here it is. So you need to do that. That's, you know, if I wanted to get Adrian on Ramble On, which I will want to get him on Ramble On, I will be the one who calls him and goes, hey, I want you on this. But this is your company, so you have to do that. Speaking of your company, we need to get into something else. There's something weird happening at Action Park Media.
What's
that
happening?
I need to know what happened.
There's all kinds of weird shit happening. I don't even know what you could be talking about.
Stock tip Dave. I came in and he's no longer Stock Tip Dave. What is happening? He's rebranding
himself. He's thinking about rebranding. So we're trying to pitch some. Well, we had a happy hour. We had an Action Park happy hour down the street at Mr. Furley's last night, and it went awry. Dave got mad because we were pitching ideas.
What were the ideas?
It was a creative conversation gone terribly wrong, but we were all laughing. We thought Dave was in the bathroom.
Well,
you were all laughing
because you were fucking hammered because you guys called me, and I had a girlfriend who I dated before Sarah who called me once with four of her friends, and this was someone who I thought was kind of sophisticated, but she called me annihilated, and she's like, my friends with the real entourage, okay?
Oh,
like these four sloppy drunk girls.
That was a horrible impression. But
you don't even know her. What
disgusting,
are you talking about?
No, just a disgusting impression.
It was repulsive.
Are you implying that we, Scotty and Dave and I, sounded like that last night?
Okay, I don't want to misgender anybody, but make sure
you get that right.
With the voices, I mean, so basically, when this ended our relationship, by the way, and I told this woman after that, because by the way, this is like...
It was just a turn off that she was that hammered?
Yeah, I was like, listen, I'm 50 years old. This isn't like cool. And by the way, that night, I'm not even joking.
Plus, and then it's like an Entourage reference to go along with it.
Oh, the whole thing was awful. Yeah. And by the way, we'd never talked about Entourage. I didn't even know she watched it. It was like not like one of those things.
You thought she was just around for your pickleball skills? Fuck, you think she was doing that in the first place?
By the way, Gary, are you fucking listening
to this
guy?
She had no idea.
Like Adrian would ever attack me like
this? She had no idea. She didn't even watch Entourage.
By the way, Connolly had suddenly turned himself into Adrian. He's like, so then you said to Adrian, and he said, I'll fucking put you through the fucking wall, bro. That's not what happened. So anyway, but that night, 4 o'clock in the morning, I never used to lock my doors, which now, since there was a mass murder next to my house last week, I now have to lock my doors with my German shepherds. And my, no, eight people were shot and four people are dead and two in critical condition. That's a mass shooting. So, but anyway, that night, she walked into my house at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, I go to sleep at 9:30. I'm out, and the dogs went bananas. I don't know what's happening. I grabbed my gun, which at the time had no bullets, and I came out. And how about that? So that's a real story.
Yeah.
So anyway, the point was.
So you were thinking at one point that maybe Scotty and I were going to show up at your house, like, duh.
You guys were so hammered and were
and
yapping.
You met this girl and you just thought, like, wow, I just wowed her with my personality. She knew nothing about Entourage, didn't know about kissing a fool.
Let's get back to the Stock Tick Dave rebranding.
I mean, do you see how he's hitting me, though? And by the way, I just want you to know, for that.
I think this is like therapy. It's good.
But I need to say, for that jerk off who says I'm mean to Connolly, this is what happened.
I'm being a hard hitting interviewer. I'm just asking the questions that people want to hear.
I'm not even taking it sensitive. But anyway, the reality of what happened last night is two drunk Irish fucking guys called me up. They were so excited about Stock Tip rebranding himself, Glennie Balls. They must have mentioned Glennie Balls 9 times. Who I know who Glennie Balls is. I love Glennie Balls, and I kept saying, "What about Glennie Balls?" And they kept going, "He loves Entourage."
No, so what? No. That's not why we were saying Glennie Balls. We were talking. Dave is having a hard time, like, jumping on board with pulling the trigger on a rebrand, and I'm saying these guys like Glennie Balls, who at Barstool, and Brianna Chicken Fry, like, they have done these names, and like they're fucking making gazillions of dollars.
Was Glennie Balls?
Glennie Balls is doing really well.
First of all, you didn't let me finish.
What is it?
I know Glennie Balls is doing well.
Right.
Did he rebrand? Was he something
prior? No, but I'm saying
to
like he plays a character. He's
okay,
Glennie Balls.
Stock Tip was Stock Tip. So anyway,
he wants to rebrand the character.
If anyone could still follow this.
Yeah. We lost.
I didn't understand what was happening, because exactly what you're saying there. I didn't know there was a rebrand. I don't know if Dave's involved, but Dave, just so you know, I'm pushed into, just tell Dave you like Chip. So I'm like, all right. So I fucking text Dave, I like Chip. Dave responds to me, unlike you and Adrian, Dave responds to me in less than 90 seconds if I text him. Nothing. So now I'm texting the guys. I'm like, why did I get fucking involved in this? Is Dave going to be mad at me now? And they kept saying he's happy. When
Chip
I walked Vandruff. In this morning,
Chip Vandruff,
I learned
is
the truth.
His new name, because that's his middle name.
But Dave stormed out of the bar. He stormed out of the bar.
Nobody. We thought he was in the bathroom. We thought he was in the bathroom. I'm like, he was the only one. He thought that something was happening there that was not happening.
All right, Dave, we're going to give you a chance to talk. Do you want to rebrand Stock Tip, Dave?
I mean, I like the name, but I walked out of the bar not because of the name, because I tried to put my Instagram name back to Stock Tip Dave, and that made me angry, and I'm like, forget this, and I stormed out and walked home in Irish goodbye.
Dave, you ever retained semen, Dave?
Dave retained semen.
You ever seen a grown man naked, Dave?
We
and by the way, for anyone who thinks I'm weird, that's from the movie Airplane. One of the great movies of all time.
We had a blast last night at the APM Happy Hour. But apparently Dave did not, because
the APM Happy Hour is you and Scotty.
No, Kevin Carrigi and Dave. We all went to Mr. Furley's.
Yeah. All right,
let's get into it.
No, when we come back. See, right. Although, by the way, also, people are complaining about ads, Connolly.
We're on it.
There's going to be less ads.
Just listen close. We're on it.
Listen close to what?
To me. Say something? When I tell you that we are on it.
Meaning there'll be less ads.
You've been heard.
Okay.
You've been heard.
All right, we'll be back.
All right, we're coming back. Sometimes picking wine can be hard. You're not sure which wine to pick. There's so many. You're at a crowded supermarket, cruising the wine aisle, feeling lost, intimidated, or just tired of always buying the same thing. You want to explore, but you don't know where to begin. That's why you need First Leaf. Here's why. As America's most personalized wine company, First Leaf takes the guesswork out of wine selection. It's easy. You take their short taste quiz and rate the first few wines they send you. Then, First Leaf will use your response to curate customized selection of delicious, award-winning wines based on your personal preferences. With a 96% accuracy, a variety of new and exciting wines will be delivered to your door, with each bottle priced lower than what you would pay at a wine store. You even get to choose when you receive your wine, and every selection is backed by First Leaf's satisfaction guaranteed. When I'm driving home to pick up a bottle of wine for dinner, I stare at the wall. There's so many selections. There's wine everywhere. I don't know which way is left or which way is right. So that's why if you sign up today and get your first 6 bottles for $39.95 plus free shipping, go to tryfirstleaf.com/victory. That's tryfirstleaf.com/victory to get your first 6 bottles for $39.95 plus free shipping. Tryfirstleaf.com/victory.
Welcome back to Victory the Podcast, Season 4, Episode 8, Gary's Desk. Dylan hates it. He was painted by Gary Busey. Something else may have happened.
Bad storyline.
Yeah.
What? Let's start with the storylines. Let's start with the worst part of it. What happened with, where was Gary Busey at this point in his life? Gary Goldman, who's also joining us, who's our ace assistant director and knows probably more about behind the scenes than you and I do.
The interesting thing, though, is last week...
Gary, you got to talk into the microphone, too. Pull the microphone.
Yes. Here I am.
There you go. All right. So, Doug, what do you have to say?
It's almost like I don't speak. Do you hear it? I mean, it's crazy.
No, you guys are good. So, being in this room is like being on an episode. It's hilarious.
Just let me finish a thought, because it becomes very difficult. Last week, we were talking about Gary Busey, and then I'm not friends with Gary Busey. And then we walked out of the studio, and Dave Perkel, our cinematographer, calls me up, and he's with Gary Busey. He calls us on a FaceTime and puts Connolly and Dylan on a FaceTime with
you
Gary Busey.
You put me into
it. Oh, whatever.
By the way, that was, honestly, if I had to say one of my biggest pet peeve is when people just stick me on a FaceTime with somebody. And Gary Busey, he can't hear where you're like tall. It was a super wild, uncomfortable. I didn't know that. So the Perkel was with him?
Yeah, Perkel.
Oh, I didn't know that.
What do you think? I called Gary Busey?
I don't know. I figured somebody ran into him.
And about your pet peeve, there's 0% chance that if Gary Busey FaceTimes me and I'm sitting with you, that I'm not going to answer it and
just to take a little pressure off you. Yeah.
No, I mean, I wouldn't answer it to talk to Gary Busey. I don't have anything to say to Gary Busey. So.
Well, right. So, yeah, it was weird, though. It was awkward.
Do you think...
But that's a coincidence. You're right, as we sit to talk about Gary's desk.
Exactly. So, well, we were talking about Busey, actually, weirdly enough, last week, because we were still talking about this episode that we're not going to do, that we finally are doing. So, anyway, the storylines. Which Connolly's storyline, he's got a good storyline. He's trying to start an office. He's trying to get some respectability. He's trying to get people to take him seriously.
Be the person of the record. So the business knows that they can go out to then speak to somebody in Vincent Chase's camp.
And it will be interesting because in real life, Kevin Connolly, who plays Kevin Connolly in our new show, Ramble On, you deal with this stuff, right? I mean, this was not an unrealistic story for a guy who's starting a new business, who's trying to get some traction, correct?
Yeah, no, it is. It's hard. And, you know, that kind of management, by the way, we're talking about it. It's even like talent management. Like the idea that I understand that I got to lock down Grenier. I got to lock it down. It's stressful for me because it's not easy. Because you're dealing with other people. It's different. Like acting and anything in the filmmaking side is very, to a certain extent, in your hands, right? But we get into this stuff, and there's a lot of personalities. It's stressful.
Like
that's why
running.
I smoke weed.
Show running?
I'll call Adrian for you.
What's that?
I'll call Adrian for you. I'll book him.
Which, yeah, by the way,
Gary Goldman could book him.
Is what you should be doing, is having Gary, who can go out there and, is, you know, because...
Fearless.
Yeah, because the truth is like, even as a showrunner, which a lot of what Connolly was just describing is difficult. But Gary's the one who has to really deal with these egos and the bullshit. And I don't mean Adrian's ego, but like,
well, just
Gary
the general
Busey.
Actors. Yeah, Gary Busey.
Because didn't something happen on the set with Gary Busey on this episode with a car ride or something? Yeah.
Well, also, the other thing, if you look, I think this is the most together that he's been. Didn't it feel that way? Like maybe he was going in a good, he looked kind of in shape and kind of thin, and it looked like, I don't know, he didn't have that same crazy Gary Busey vibe in this episode to me performance-wise.
Right. It was a good episode for him because it was one location for him. He didn't have to show up to, you know, to different places. He likes to do the same, match where he was the same day, coming back, just like
the driver. He got dropped off. They sent the car to pick him up, and at the end of the day, he wouldn't get in the car until it was the same car with the same driver.
Right, different Teamster.
Different Teamster. He wanted the same
setup. He wanted the same Teamster.
The same Teamster in the same car to take him home. It was like a weird, something
like
that,
OCD,
right?
Like his OCD or something?
Maybe something like that. But
scenes with Gary always take a few minutes longer than you would guess because Gary likes to improv.
But I don't remember this episode being Busey and the Beach, which still is one of my favorite episodes and really almost killed me because Gary was, I mean, he was brutally difficult on that episode.
That's the first time we worked with him.
Yeah.
But I think by the second time around, Gary, and stop me if I'm wrong, you guys would almost prepare for him, right? You would pad that day a little bit.
I remember the when we got the script, the crew and everyone's reaction was similar to Adrian's reaction in the script where whose desk is it? It's Gary's. And then we're all like, oh, another episode with Mr. Busey.
Yeah.
But it worked out well this time.
Right, but you have to prepare for him. It's like,
yes.
You go, all right, this is going to take us a little, we should allow a little more time to get
ready.
He has
a process.
Gary, whether you... Whether you want to name names or not, you don't have to.
Okay, good.
Give me, you've done, no, but Gary, you've done.
I'm very private.
You've done probably 200 plus episodes of television.
More than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
High
yeah.
end.
But, high end.
High end.
Yeah, high end, irrelevant to the story. How many, what's some of the most difficult things you've dealt with talent? Who your job, aside from, which it's weird that it is even your job. Your job is so all-encompassing, but a lot of times you're the guy that has to be the guy that gets someone out of their trailer or gives them a call time. So what's like one of the most...
encourages them to, you know, your job is to create the most economical and fun environment for them to be in and to perform their best. That's more difficult for some actors than other actors. Some yeah. people don't want to be there. That's really the most challenging thing.
That is true, right?
They just don't want to be there that day, or, you know, the actors have private lives and maybe they had a really bad day and they got to shine in front of the camera and light it up. And
give us a
difficult.
Story. You don't have to tell us who, but give us a story. Like, what's like one of those days where you're like, I can't believe I have to deal with this crap.
Oh, you know, I'm not going to name names because that's, we don't do that here. We're family. Right. But some days on another show, an actor was in such a furious mood that, you know, we were about to roll and I said action, and then the camera battery died, which is something that happens.
Well, things happen.
Things right? happen. You got to change lenses. The light moves a little bit. The camera battery died. It shouldn't have died right before. This particular actor likes, when you call action, everything better be ready. And because of that, he stormed off a set, made a huge scene yelling at everybody. All because the battery was dead. And then we shut down for a half hour, 45
and
minutes.
Now, Gary,
that's a dagger to a day, too.
That's just brutal.
Now, Gary, you work more than Colleen and I on sets, even though Colleen just played Jesus Christ in a movie.
Very handsome.
Coming out. An announcement came out today. I had a question, Gary.
Yeah, you work more than...
Now, can you get away with behavior like that in 2023? I mean...
I would like to say no, but I still think it happens. I mean,
but have you seen anything recently that's as bad as some of the stuff, or has it gotten? Because again,
no.
To me, I need to just say as clearly as I can, and you'll never, you know, whether I had arguments with my friends or my internal staff, mm-hmm. there was never anything that was crazy.
Nothing like that.
There was anything crazy on our set, but I have been around actors and talent who don't want to be there.
Yeah.
And also who believe they're better than everybody else who is there. And it drives me crazy for a number of reasons. For one, the crew is usually much tougher than the actors and the writers and the directors, and they're working harder than the actors and the directors. Mm-hmm. And I get that at the end of the day, it's their face and they have to look good and all of this shit. But I find it one of the most self-entitled positions in Hollywood, you know, where they believe they're more important than the other thing. And again, I've worked with some of the best actors right. in the world who are awesome and easy, and Connelly's one of them for the most part.
I really think that's an exception to the rule. Those arseholes are really do suck the air off the set, but most of the cast out there are really glad to be there and really just want to make it a better day. I do one note there is that you asked in 2023. I think since post-COVID, people are more
grateful to be there.
Grateful to be working and to be there and not be stuck at home.
Yeah.
So
it's on our set, by the way, because we did Ramble On was 8 days. I mean, was there a more enjoyable place to be on a daily basis? It was awesome.
Creative enclave. It's
yeah.
Just so
just
fun.
Want to get back there. So
you
all right.
know what it is, and I'm not defending the actors because I agree with you, Doug. But I think, you know, actors, unfortunately or fortunately, is what sort of makes the world go round, right? So you can get away with things if you bring value, right? And take a CSI Miami, right? Wasn't Crusoe a handful or something, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's the star of the show. 30 million people a week watch
Give it.
It
to him.
Just like whatever. If he wants to come in, whatever, you just kind of deal with it if it's working, right?
Especially with schedules. Like if they they're supposed to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and they come to you and say, "I really can't come in on Wednesday," and that's just
but the truth
very
is,
difficult.
We've all seen Caruso's a classic example of it. So for anyone who's out there, it's like the guy was a star of two of the biggest shows on the history of television, and now I don't know where the fuck he is.
Well, you would think he's got about $1 billion, hopefully, you know.
Well, I don't know about hopefully or not, because he was apparently an asshole, so I don't root for him that money. My point is, though, it may catch up with you, and you better deliver over and over and over if you're going to be a jerk. But the real point is why be a jerk? This is the greatest job in the world when you get it. And by the way, we know, everyone in this room, it's not easy to get them again. It's not easy to get a hit show, no matter how talented you are. And I don't mean me, you guys. It's tough. So you should enjoy it and be grateful when you get the opportunity. So.
Trying to think. I've seen some pretty wild shit. But I think it goes back to kind of what Gary said. You know, especially on a long run of a show, you do 6 years, 7 years, 8 years with somebody, you're going to see them go through things, everybody in some capacity, right? So,
but you don't see, you know, for the most part, and again, I'm not saying as a rule, because there's horrific showrunners out there. We've heard that story. There's, you know, Gary and I worked with a DP who I thought was amazing, but he had a reputation that pretty much destroyed his career before we worked with him. But he was good with us. But you don't see Mark Mylod or Julian Farino have a fucking meltdown on the set, but they're still forced to deal with the actors. And my point now is those guys, especially Mylod. Mylod's a guy who can now give actors jobs. Like, he was just a gun for hire 20 years ago, and now he's a guy that, you know, hopefully he remembers, oh, not only was he talented, but he was awesome to be around, because I think those combinations are a good thing. So, Colin,
I'm saying bringing it back to Gary, right? So, like, I think Gary did the first episode, Busey's Beach, and I would imagine, just based on how popular the episode was and the response to Busey, that, you know, he was ready to dial it up in a second go at it. And then it becomes a little bit where it's a little bit about him, right? The whole day. I don't know. I'm sure that you wrote better stuff.
I don't know if Gary Busey even thought about the show. Because when I saw, I mean, there were a couple of times. I saw Gary Busey at the premiere and he was like,
you and I have worked together on something.
Yeah,
before,
what
right?
do I know you from? I'm like this. And then at the movie, it was like he had never been on the show before, you know? So, and again, Gary,
I was happy I was not in that scene.
Gary was nice on a lot of parts of it, but he also had a very severe motorcycle accident that definitely, you know, impacted him. The guy's an Oscar winner or nominee?
Nominee. I mean, he was high maintenance in the nicest way possible. And as much as everybody was like, oh boy, it was almost like people got kind of giddy, started talking about it. Like, yo, we got Busey on Wednesday. It's almost like everybody came in ready to go on the Busey day to lock in all their stories. So there was that too. But
when Gary did the podcast, though.
I'm a little disappointed in the scene, if I'm being totally honest.
Well, in the scene of the writing, or
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. But it just didn't seem like when he's free flowing, like he was on the beach that day, like it was working, and it just didn't feel like it worked as strongly.
As masterfully
as Julian Farino shot it. That's what I'm saying. Thank God we had a guy who knew what he was doing behind the camera, because visually the episode is good. Victory the Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What's up, Victory listeners? Whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too. Enter the name Your Price Tool from Progressive. The name Your Price Tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at Progressive.com to try the name Your Price Tool for yourself and join the over 29 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
By the way, it's a good point, because I do look at it now and I go, that scene didn't work. I don't know if it was the writing. I mean, the story is Vince wants to get E a great present, and he's got a connection to Robert De Niro, where that desk allegedly is from, Scorsese De Niro, which is New York. It was
Mickey Rooney's desk, and what was it, Breakfast at Tiffany's?
Did they say Breakfast at Tiffany's? I think so.
And then De Niro got Scorsese, it from Scorsese after New York Stories.
Yeah, by the way, I know me as someone, like, that's a piece of memorabilia that I would like to have. So it had a strong desire line to it that Vince wanted to get something for E.
But you're not going to remember. I don't know if you remember this, but if I'm watching that scene today with them selling him the desk, it feels like they're lying, doesn't it?
A little bit.
It felt like, oh, we got to have a story behind every piece, right? And she said, you know, Mickey Rooney and Breakfast Tiffany's, like, oh, also De Niro's. Like, I don't know. It felt like you were trying to tip the audience off.
You know what?
That maybe they were.
But again, it's also part of the same thing. Like, performance or writing, I'm 100% sure because that's the storyline, that they wanted that desk because it had some personal meaning. Right. Now, maybe we didn't write enough details about it where, you know, Vince would have said Scorsese and this and that. We probably should have had some of that. But you're right. That scene also, which, you know, when I was watching it, two things I'll say about the beautiful girl. Do you have her name, Dave?
Rachel Roberts.
So Rachel Roberts.
Who was the girl that says about Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's, the saleswoman.
Yeah, but then she basically just, you know, is willing to go home with Vince. And
well, she walks out of the apartment later, and you rolled your eyes and were like, all right, maybe.
Yeah, because when they criticize, oh, this is the depiction of woman. Now, I'll be very clear, and Connolly, you know this from being around a lot of movie stars. I've seen it take a lot less for a movie star to take, but at the same time, when you're watching it,
it didn't have to be that way, maybe.
When you're watching it on a show, it would have been better if there was some type of connection between them, besides that he's Vince and she's just willing to do it because she was.
The thing is, he flirted with her, got the desk, and then he took the girl home.
But right? I think part of what the show was, and certainly at the time, it was this wish fulfillment that if you're a movie star, you can do that, which again, you can, and you can do it in 2023, but. You want to see the spark. You want to see something. I don't know.
They should have had a little bit more of a connection. It would have bothered you less if it didn't feel just like a callback
Yeah, exactly. A joke. And that's the thing. And the same thing with the desk. If I really felt, which we know is true because we know from later episodes how much the guys love Scorsese and De Niro and, you know.
Of course. We've already talked about that. Come on, Vince. I want to shoot you long lens.
Yeah. So it would have been nice feel more of that because by the time you get to Busey's house, you're really not that interested in anything except for how crazy Busey is going to be. And what I think you're saying is, I'm not sure the writing's so bad. Busey doesn't pop the way he popped in the first one.
That's
what
it is.
He just lost energy.
Yeah.
Some cutaways are after when they puts the paint on drama, there's all these other scenes that didn't get put in, not scenes, but cuts that didn't get put in, where she takes that whole bucket and pours it over his head. And then it would be
Why
wasn't it put in?
I don't know.
You mean we shot it?
We shot it at the end. That was like the final note. I remember Dylan being,
I was about to say. Dylan did not like
about having his shirt off and just standing there.
And by the way, Dylan looked great when I saw him with his shirt off.
I thought Dylan looked good.
Yeah.
Push-ups in between every time. Right.
But I remember that Dylan did not like that whole scene, thought it was stupid, which part of it kind of was. It's a little, you know.
Well, it could have been. There are things that if we thought would have been stupid and worked, and that could have been good. I don't know. Like you said, Busey just didn't pop.
But you know what it also is? It's like this show, which I like to think, and a lot of the other stuff in this episode, even the twins is a little pushed, but it's pretty realistic. That shit happens in agencies, whether it's identical twins or not. That stuff happens with sex with coworkers and the boss has to deal with it. But the Busey thing, when I look at it now, there could have been anything. They have to get that desk from him, and it could have been anything that Busey wanted them to do. And a more realistic thing is probably Busey wants Vince to do his son's short film, or he wants something that's a little more realistic and not so silly. But I don't know. I think
at one point you looked at me like during the painting scene, you're like, this is stupid.
Yeah, no, it was hard to watch for me, actually. It really was. And the opening of this show, so let's just start at the beginning. I mean, I was like, why did I hate this so much? It pops from minute one.
Oh, nice walk and talk.
Good
dialogue.
That's what I'm
saying. Technically, it was a really well done episode.
No, but also just the dialogue was good. And we always loved the Murphy group. You and I have been talking about the Murphy group for fucking 20 years.
Murphy group is hilarious.
You know, and calling Jackie Stone is one of my best friends from high school. And I don't mean the actor. The character's name is Jackie Stone in the scene. And getting the interview and stuff, it is.
There are certain things. Seth Green, tell Sloan I set it up is a big one. So there's like a top tier list of like comments suit. Like there's, and then there's like the bottom, the lower tier of people that, and there's a lot, I get a comment about that a lot.
The Murphy group.
Why the group?
Yeah.
You got one client.
That's what I just thought was so funny.
Yeah, right. We ran that one for a long time.
Yeah. I love
the group?
But all of it, the whole episode feels so unrealistic. Like there's 0% shot they're going to Hollywood Boulevard to get like The Office. I don't know what they're doing there besides it looks great.
It's where the Murphy group could afford. And that was a really good, different look for the show because we're always down in Beverly Hills or nice house. It was good to be a little gritty.
Right. So, and you're on Hollywood Boulevard, right?
The gritty, like gritty, iconic.
It's funny. Mm-hmm. That's you guys being super. Yeah, that's where the Murphy group would have existed. Yeah, that's my
point. I don't think it would have. That's my point. I don't think that Leo's manager would fucking take that office. But
that's a little
I'm just saying, you know, I always try
like
to be
E's
really
trying to
realistic.
Get out on his own.
No, I get
like
it.
Do his own
Believe
thing.
Me, I get the whole thing. I'm just saying it was more of a choice of style, and I think that's where the episode kind of goes wrong. Rather than staying grounded and realistic, and whether E's got a fucking, you know, ask Ari to give him a back room in the mail, whatever it is. It just wasn't very realistic to me to put him in there. All of it feels, for comedy's sake, this tiny little thing with the stupid table that you're sitting at the beginning. But the dialogue was all funny. You know, the dialogue was all good and everybody was good. But
that storyline, I mean, thank God for Mary J. Blige and the Sklar brothers.
And you know how Mary J. Blige comes around.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That just came kind of out of nowhere. How'd that happen?
I'm in the Beverly Hills Hotel and I think I was with Brett Ratner and he was like, or he was with Mary and he's like, Doug, Mary like loves Entourage. She would love to be on it. And by the way, I love Mary J. Blige, right. Like love. And I remember we were standing in the right outside the little diner downstairs. I said, if you want in, you're in now.
Just
you
know? Say the word.
Yeah. So we had to come up with a storyline.
Well, that's what I was saying. So did she sneak into the Sklar brothers or did that all happen around
that
the casting of Mary J. Blige? 100%
happened
on.
Around the casting of Mary J. Blige. And the Sklar brothers, when they were on the podcast, though, said they were in a scene in an earlier episode and they kind of improvised something or something. I forget.
Gary,
exactly what
yeah, they said, yeah, they had a good thing going with Piven.
Yeah.
Something. And then this came up. So, but the fact that whole storyline, because unlike, I'm not trying to beat up on Gary Busey here, unlike the Gary Busey storyline, that was kind of ridiculous and didn't pop. Even though you pushed the Sklar Brothers thing a little bit, it somehow worked for me.
Yeah. No, all of
I mean,
stuff,
it was out there, bro.
It's out there, but yeah. I mean, look, there are, I mean, two of the richest brothers in this town.
Of course,
the guy had sex
right.
with his wife. You know who it is.
Of course.
I'm not talking about it, but so it does happen. But inside the agency, but I thought
like them fist fighting was like odd.
It was a little over the top. But Piven was so funny in this episode.
He was,
and I actually, you know, whether Allie wrote it or Weiss or me or whoever Burns, it was really funny. I thought like,
well, the Sklar brothers like we can't work together. Like, what are you talking about? Jeter and A-Rod's dick swing around the same locker room and they can't stand each other.
I like that, and I like him talking about like them in bunk beds with their little. Fucking their car or whatever he's talking about, and do they? You know, he just keeps going at them. Like, do you guys take a carpool together? I mean, like, it's just it's funny. And
yeah.
The Sklars, like, they have a really they have a really funny presence. And
you know what? Well, I was thinking about something, dude. You know, like, and just like I knew Vince wasn't gonna have sex with the guy's wife, I just knew you guys and how protective you were of the characters, and of course. Piven and Ari would say these wild things, but you knew Piven was going to rectify that.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't.
Yeah, he does. He ends up firing the guy, right? I mean,
Yeah, but he doesn't bring them both back. He fucking throws them out.
He fires both, but he had to resurrect, like, I can't keep this guy here because he earned money. Like, you had to clean that up character-wise. Piven walks in, and I instinctually looked at both Doug and Gary and said, I'm guessing Piven was not supposed to throw all that shit off the desk, and you guys both like, no, he was not.
Yeah, I mean,
that
look,
was rehearsed. I mean, it worked, but...
You know, Jeremy...
Broke many computers.
Yeah, no, he did. And again, it's...
Like, looking back at it, was it worth it?
Yeah, it was. You know what? It really was. He like...
he fucking cleared that motherfucker off.
He's so in, but Gary was there when he cleared off a real computer. I mean, it was like, you know, an Apple computer, but Jeremy's so in.
He also threw his prop phone off the hillside, right?
I don't think Jeremy's doing it to... I think he's legitimately in character.
Yeah, of course.
And he feels it.
And, of course.
You know, I think that's why he's so good. And the truth is a lot...
he felt that one, bro.
A lot of this episode he carries. But let's get into like something that's, you know... Peter Jackson is in this episode, and you know, when people criticize the show, I go, do you realize the greatest filmmakers in the history of this business all came on this show because they liked it? They didn't
that
come
one,
on for money.
That one dropped out of nowhere for me today. Yeah. That was a nice little thing. And of course, Doug
looked
and I like,
great too.
Doug and I go, does anything ever come of that storyline? I'm like, I don't know, dude. We have no idea. We have no idea.
I don't
idea.
Think we ever mentioned it again because, by the way, so Peter Jackson is
only
in-
time ever in Entourage history. This one time.
That we drop something like that?
No, that you're going to tell. Didn't Peter Jackson's in New Zealand.
Twice.
Peter Jackson's in New Zealand doing...
Peter Jackson's in New Zealand. We find that he likes the show and he'll do it, but A, he wants to shoot it at his real company because he's got a real gaming company. And
he's like,
B,
I'll just send you the footage.
Yeah, and B, I'll make it. You know, we actually had three times where that happened. I mean,
Peter Berg.
Peter Berg shot something?
Yeah, well, he was not with us. He was somewhere else, like he was on another B side of a phone call, and he was.
And he shot it himself?
Yeah.
It's a universal truth that everyone wishes they had more time. Time to be productive. Time to relax. Time on your own term. The biggest time suck of all tends to happen in those in-between moments, getting from point A to point B. Arriving 2 hours before a 45-minute flight pains us all. Pushing your way through crowds and never-ending lines only adds insult to injury. Well, we're here to tell you about the ultimate time-saving hack when it comes to travel. Introducing JSX. JSX is redefining the way you fly with their joyfully simple hop-on jet service. You may be thinking, what is a hop-on jet service? It's an entirely new way of flying. Altogether.
An entirely new way of flying.
Well, you can enjoy the perks of private travel without the private price tag. They say time is money, and JSX believes you should spend yours wisely. That means skipping the traffic jams, long lines, and crowded gates at traditional big airports. Get in the not-so-best-kept secret and fly between JSX's private terminals where you only need to check in 20 minutes before your flight takes off. The time savings doesn't stop there. You simply walk up the jet stairs, snag a selfie. You're there in minutes with free checked bags as a part of your fare and just 30 seats on every flight. Your path from check-in to seat is as easy as it gets on board. Let's talk about on board. Enjoy all the comforts you'd expect from your semi-private jet. Complimentary cocktails, snackies, plus Starlink Wi-Fi rolling out fleet-wide. Stretch out with business class legroom and pat yourself on the back for being awesome and saving time. The perks don't stop there upon arrival. You can be on your way in minutes with no overhead bins, weird overhead bins. They are weird. And just 30 seats on every flight. You can go from touchdown to downtown. 7 points. Take it to the house. You're there in minutes. Your bags will be brought plane side for easy and quick retrieval. So you can forget about your baggage carousels. Take a deep breath. Your new favorite way to travel has arrived. Don't save time. Enjoy your time savings with the ultimate travel hack, JSX. As a Victory of the Podcast listener, you can enjoy $50 off your next JSX flight by using code JOYFUL50 at checkout. That's JOYFUL, JOYFUL, 50. For $50 off your next JSX flight. Book by February 28th for travel through September 30th. Blackout dates may apply, obviously. Do not wait. Visit www.jsx.com and book your flight today. Victory the Podcast.
So, Scarlett Johansson. Like right.
That was the first one. Scarlett
we had
Johansson.
No one on our crew anywhere near Scarlett Johansson.
Just a camera guy.
And again, I don't mean to criticize the guy because he doesn't know our show, but I almost cried when I saw the shot.
Yeah.
The shot with the giant American flag behind her and shooting her from under her chin. No, I didn't like the shot at all.
But when Peter Jackson calls and says, listen, I got it.
And by the way,
I'm going to send you the footage when it's done. Because I did the other side of the phone call.
It.
Right, you got it. You're like, holy shit, he's got dudes.
Oh, it's better
sword
than
sword fighting.
Yeah, but also you could see how it animated. That's 18 years ago. You could see how they were fighting, and you saw it on the screen at the same time.
He sent all of those assets. You just got them one day and slid it into the back of the.
And by the way, I think I had like a 3-minute conversation with Peter Jackson. It wasn't like I got to. Listen, I want you to bring
pick his brain. He's like, I got something planned. Yeah. And you're like, great, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. The other time that happened, which was the scary.
So we got Scarlett. Pete Berg, I remember. Peter Jackson, and who else?
And then the scariest ever.
Scorsese?
Yeah, which maybe we talked about on this podcast.
I don't think we did yet.
This was the worst ever. So Matt Damon tells me that Bono wants to come back on the show and do something for the charity. And I write the script, and we film the episode with LeBron and Matt Damon. And Matt Damon talks to Bono on FaceTime. And we don't have Bono. And Matt, who I swear to you, I mean, the guy is a star for a reason. But Matt on this set, I thought like we were friends for life. I mean, this guy was talking about my writing. I'm like, we're going to make movies together. We're going to be doing this. The guy
had like, fuck these losers. Yeah, exactly. Let's get out of here. Let me do Born Ultimatum.
You know, did I ever tell you that when a guy came running up to me in a garage once and he's like, Doug, Doug, Doug. And I'm like, what's up? He's like, I'm such a huge fan. I was like, wow. He's like, fucking Born Identity. I'm like, I'm not Doug Liman. I'm Doug Ellen, whatever. I don't even know how he confused us, but that happened. But so Matt actually had an Ari Gold monologue memorized verbatim and said, nobody writes like this in TV. Anyway, I have to say this now, not to be a narcissist because some jerk off says I'm a narcissist and mean to Colin. Because it made me feel, it made me feel very good. It made me feel very nice. So,
yeah, but, of course, Matt Damon's. Do you have
But anyway, I thought Matt and I will have, it'll be Matt, Ben, and I from now on. You know, like
fuck
that's going to be the
Connolly
thing. Yeah.
And fucking jerk off.
I think Matt can play Johnny
it's
Drama.
Me and you and Ben.
By the way, let's read this. Matt's Vince, Casey's fucking drama. So then we're done. We 10 days until the episode is aired, and I have no idea how I'm supposed to contact Bono, you know, and I'm like asking Brian
Burns.
But
what, you need his side of the footage?
I need his side of the phone call. He has to talk to has to talk to the screen and whatever their conversation
And all
was.
You need is just like whatever, just anything.
Well, now I'll tell you, it's not just anything. So anyway, I email Matt Damon, you know, who I expect a quick quick response. I get nothing.
He's
nothing,
like,
nothing.
How'd this guy get my email?
Panic starts setting in. I have no idea what to do. And then Will McDonough, who I think Will McDonough got us Tom Brady. No, Mark got us Tom Brady. I'm sorry. But he came with Tom. He was a friend of Tom's.
Will McDonough's like friends with Gretzky's buddy, right?
Yeah, I guess I met Will through Tom, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, somehow I tell Will I'm in this bad spot and I wasn't looking for help. And he goes, I swear to God, he goes, oh, I'm going to Dublin for the U2 concert tomorrow. Just give me the script. I'll get it done.
Oh
and I'm
God.
Looking at this guy like, what the fuck are you talking about? Okay. Like I need like,
desperate times require yeah. desperate measures.
So anyway, he leaves.
So like one of Brady's boys is like, yeah, bro, send me the script. I'll have him record it.
Yeah. And by the
for
way,
HBO.
Yeah. And by the way, it gets to the point where I have no option.
Season 4 too.
Like. I am going to show, we're going to put this clip on this segment because it's so freaking awesome. But anyway, Will's going to the concert. I speak to him from Ireland. I don't remember if we text at that point or phones. I don't know how that works. Or what year this is, 2000, whatever. And
7.
He says, concert's tonight, okay? You'll wake up in the morning, you'll have it. Now, by the way, he's not even telling me that he's friends with Bono or that he spoke to him. Just he's got great seats and he's going to make this happen. I wake up in the morning and I have an email, okay? And it is a video of Bono doing this dialogue. And it's what could have happened with Peter Jackson, except for Peter Jackson's like an all-time filmmaker.
And Academy Award
he winner. Understood how he should talk to actors. But Bono, who I believe I was told is a fan of the show, knows the show,
He did a couple things for it, so he must have some reference.
But this video looked like he had no idea what was happening. So he's talking to Vince, and I wish I watched this footage before I saw it, but I have it at my house. I wake up, and he is like, Vincent Chase. And
is he into a phone? Is it a phone?
He's on camera talking to FaceTime. Okay. So he's doing what he's supposed to do, but he's doing it at a pace that would be like 4.5 minutes to do whatever that little phone call is. And he's doing it in, again, U2, one of my favorite bands, Bono, one of my idols.
Peter Jackson understands pace a little bit better, scene pace.
I don't know what happened, but I honestly was like, I don't even know what I'm going to do. I mean, this is airing in like a week, 10 days and this and that. And I had to call Will McDonough and go, I need another take. I need to get on the phone with Bono. I need 90 seconds to talk to him just to give him what I need. But when I'm saying
this, if you pulled it off. If you couldn't pull it, if you didn't pull it off, would you have been able to cut a version with the other video?
No.
I've never heard this story.
No.
This is great.
No way.
It was like unusable, that first video.
Unusable, okay? It would be
and
like...
And you have it.
By the way, it would be the equivalent...
It's like, this is a different show.
It would be the equivalent of you get to the U2 concert, and instead of Bono, it's me singing up there.
Right.
Okay? It's not usable, okay? 1,000,000%, and it'll be usable for this.
Like you had a couple cocktails?
Because it was funny. It was funny for something else. But what was so awesome is I'm in a complete panic and I tell Will we need another take, but I'm saying this like there's no way this is ever going to happen. I don't even know how he made this happen in the first place. I'll get it. I'm like, I need to talk to him for 2 minutes. Just get me on the phone. And he did. And we got it. And
hello,
and
Doug.
It was great.
Hello, Doug.
It was
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, mate, you know, I was the last time around. I was just coming off stage.
Yeah, that's definitely not Irish.
How was that?
I think that's, I don't know if it's British or bad Australian.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know. It's
terrible.
Something.
But anyway, that was an amazing story. And I by the way, Just so
that's
we can be
wild.
Clearly understand this. I'm not criticizing anything about Bono. He got a piece of paper.
No,
he was asked to talk into a camera.
Nice of him.
He probably, but
nice
he probably didn't even know what the hell he was doing.
He's did two episodes for us for free.
Yeah.
So Bono falls into the
and gave
friend
us those
of
tickets.
Entourage.
We got all those tickets. Yeah, so.
But I mean, the Peter Jackson thing, again, I don't know how I didn't see that coming. And you're right, Doug. I don't think that goes anywhere. Maybe something, but no, but
Vince doesn't end up doing a Peter Jackson movie.
That was a really nice, nice little touch. And I remember you saying, "Yeah, I'm waiting for it." And he was just going to shoot it. And
I mean, think about the Academy Award winning filmmakers on the show. Scorsese.
Did he send you a bunch of angles? Do you remember? Was it multiple angles? I mean, it was a phone call, right?
I don't think he.
Did we send him my end of the phone call first?
I don't remember, but I don't think he left a lot of room for us to...
The scissors?
He made sure. And
he's
by the
like,
way...
trust me.
It was perfect, but Conley...
They're not going to be able to cut this.
Conley, think about it, though. Scorsese, Cameron, Van Zandt, Darabont. I know I'm leaving out...
M. Night.
I mean, like, these are the best filmmakers in the world who all wanted to be on the show,
yeah,
which is... awesome. And by the way, didn't get paid for it.
Right.
And it's just awesome.
It was wild because I always said always struck me about the directors is how happy they seem to not be directing. Remember Cameron was in the makeup chair? I was like, so this is what you guys bitch about all day long? And he was like all stretched out. He's like, wow, I really feel sorry for you guys. Cameron, of all the guys that came on, he was the most, he was the most one of the guys, strangely.
He was awesome.
Totally.
Isn't that weird?
And
of all people, you would have thought it had been the other way around.
And also just for knowledge, which I've talked about on the podcast before, but he's writing Avatar in the trailer in Pasadena, and I swear on my life, he comes out and he goes, how do you write this dialogue like this? I'm writing these blue people and stuff. I didn't even know what he's writing. And he wrote the biggest movie in the history of the business, and now this one's bigger, right?
Massive. Massive. Dude, we were standing outside of the soundstage when Vince and Mandy Moore are hanging on the wires, and we're all, between setups. Cameron and I are out there, and a production van drove by, and I looked at my hair in the window, and the van goes by, and Cameron just got locked in on me. He's like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, what? He's like, you literally stared at yourself the entire time that means like, but it was like a bit for him, like about actors.
He's
but,
the best.
But he was really cool.
And Connolly, I mean, we've talked about it, but it doesn't matter.
I tanked my Avatar.
You auditioned for Avatar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm clearly based on that, obviously, you know.
You what?
Clearly based on Entourage. I mean, they called. I mean, I auditioned at his house. I mean, it was, yeah.
I know I've asked you about it before, but it still fascinates me. And I don't know if Gary's ever heard this. Have you ever heard this, Gary?
No.
So you... went to James Cameron's house. It's James Cameron and what?
I'm testing for it. Whatever, that could mean anything. You could do 50 of those. He could do whatever he wants. Yeah. He's James Cameron. But what I was under the impression that we were doing the casting office, and then they call you in and they bring in, and I'm like going to this address, and I pull up. I'm like, this is a house. This is a house.
A massive
house.
And
I ring the doorbell. And James Cameron is standing in the doorway.
That's so sick.
Right? And then he brings me into his screening room, and he showed me like 20 minutes of the movie before he even shot. He showed me a bunch of stuff.
Sick.
I'm sitting in the screening room with James Cameron with 3D glasses on, watching 20 minutes
of
Avatar.
By the way, you've not told this part.
Yeah, we're like watching it. He was so cool. And then he proceeds to bring me into the kitchen, which is, I guess, where he felt the lighting was best.
Yeah.
And I'm auditioning the scene, and he is like, he's like rolling around on the ground, literally on his hands and knees, rolling around, like shooting me from different angles with his camera. And I'm like, just supposed to be, and I admit, I choked.
So
100% choked. I just wasn't mentally prepared for that. At his house, he's rolling around, shooting me from, I'm doing the scene with the casting director, and he's like at my feet, like rolling around, shooting angles and all kinds of shit.
It's the sickest thing
ever. I just didn't.
And do you remember like doing this audition going, I'm so fucking nervous right now?
I just remember thinking, I'm not in the moment. I'm not living in the moment.
That's incredible. Two James Cameron stories is, one of the coolest shots we ever did was him in the helicopter.
Yeah, that was
remember
awesome.
That? And the helicopter was obviously on the ground. I think we shot at a Paramount. It was raised up about 14 feet in the air. such a cool shot.
I remember pulling up that day and looking at Cameron in the helicopter. Like, it was, this I was is like, a big this show. Is a,
I've yeah, got yeah, some yeah, great behind yeah. the scenes photos of that. And then also we were lucky enough to go shoot at his actual office. They let us shoot there. And all elements in his office of all his movies is just, you know, really just incredible space.
Right. Yeah, I mean, really think about that.
Didn't you guys ask him for an extra day? And he was like, no, I think we can get it done on this day.
You know what?
That he did.
I feel like that might
you,
happen.
No way. It's like, hey, oh, and can we shoot at your place? Yeah. And will you pop in? Sure. Yeah. And will you do this? No. Like at a certain point.
I think that did happen.
At a certain point, he's like, but I'm also, not coming back tomorrow.
Gary, do you remember the practical joke he played on me?
I do not.
What?
Maybe.
I mean, it would have been great to have Peter Jackson on set because I feel like he would have been cool.
That would have been awesome. But I get.
Oh, by the way, Darabont. Jesus.
I said it. Yeah, Darabont's on the list. You'll hear it when you listen back.
Thanks.
The show. So, James Cameron, I got to the set, which you were obviously involved in this, on the helicopter day.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was you, because you're probably the ringleader of this, or running over and like, Cameron's freaking out. This is not what he agreed to, the script. He hates it, this and that, blah, 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 blah.
I was in the front, the forward part of the vehicle for that. I wasn't necessarily driving it, but I was heavily involved.
And by the way, I'd heard that Cameron is tough, you know, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm calling Connolly, seeing Connolly, text Connolly, but I'm like,
I was like yeah, man. Oh no, I carried it on. I was like, yo, man, I wasn't there, but I heard that something went down base camp or something.
I'm like in a golf cart. I think it's on Paramount, right? Is that where we shot that helicopter?
Yeah.
I'm in a golf cart, and I'm literally like, I don't even know what to say here. I mean, I sent him a script. He wrote me an email that he's psyched. Happy to be there or something. I get there, he's screaming, where's Doug Allen? What is this crap? And blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I'm about to throw up. Yeah. I'm not exaggerating. And I get off the thing and I'm looking around and everybody starts laughing. And I'm
he was a total gamer, man.
He's the fucking best.
He loved our crew. I mean, he thought, you know, he runs probably the tightest ship
of course
ever. No pun intended. But he loved our crew. I mean, he was involved.
Well, was that not impressed. To love? He was impressed. High-end crew and he's looking
gone. He didn't deal with Busey, though. He didn't deal with Busey, Cameron.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Might have been a different thing. Do you remember, though, I mean... we're talking about an episode. We've already discussed it. I know it, but it was such a memorable evening. But she's an Emmy-winning actress now, but from This Is Us.
Oh, yeah.
But she had a tough...
Was the sinking of the ship, the aforementioned crash of the Y2K, it was like a big chunk of dialogue and with Cameron. And
sinking of the ship.
Sinking of the ship.
And that was like take 30. And Cameron, who, I swear to God, is writing Avatar, and he wants out.
Right. Yeah. No, that was... By the way, she went on to win an Emmy, so good for her. But it
by
was,
the way, she's awesome on the show, and she was awesome on our show.
For an
and
actor,
I would
for an
kill
actor,
kill to get her on here to ask her if she remembers it.
For an actor, it's a really, really, really tough spot to be in. And then you add the James Cameron effect, which I don't even think was what was jogging her.
But you don't know, just like you with him in the kitchen. It could have been like, holy shit.
I don't, like, it just seemed like, no, because remember she was like, oh, you go. Remember she told him, you just go.
Yeah.
I'll catch up. Yeah, no, but yeah, man, like I said, they always just seemed to be happy to not be directing, but Cameron came in with jokes. I mean, it's crazy.
And they were all happy. I mean, Darabont was awesome.
Darabont was great. I mean, we were like kind of friends with Darabont first. We had a couple dinners at Darabont. Yeah,
I thought I'd be hanging with Darabont too. I mean, by the way, why don't we get him on the podcast? Frank Darabont, creator of The Walking Dead, writer and director of The Shawshank Redemption, The Green Mile, and many other things. And honestly, one of the nicest guys in the world. And by the way, that pilot, I know you're a huge Walking Dead fan. For whatever reason, he left after the first season. I didn't really watch it. That's one of the best pilots ever.
Phenomenal.
I mean, it's genius. So.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. How about Scorsese, too? We shot him at the DGA off of 57th Street in New York.
Did you fly out there, Gary?
Yeah, we spent a week. We were there for a week.
That must be nice.
Well, we were there, too. We did we were in Queens.
Oh, it was when we were shooting.
You were there, too.
Yeah, I was there.
It was when we were shooting. Oh, no. I thought you guys went on a splinter.
He was ready to block you. Like, he blocked me when he couldn't shoot at Yankee Stadium. All right, what else? No, what are we missing on this episode?
What else? Locations in this, you know, downtown LA. We rarely shot in downtown, seedier parts.
Why were we in downtown? Cool. For what?
For down Hollywood Boulevard area.
Right, but that was like Hollywood.
And shooting at that where the desk was actually bought was a place called Blackman Cruise, which is a really
Got us that location?
My wife, there Julie Gold.
Team effort everywhere we
turn. My wife, you can follow her @with_Julie. She's an incredible interior designer, which how she knew that this place would be amicable to us.
And it was great.
Room.
And then also a little sad news on this episode, because Gary brought it up. We were watching it, and the
guys who's trying to get the desk in to the
Was awesome. And Gary said this guy went on a tear with commercials.
He was like the Bud Light. He was the driver of the Bud Light truck, wasn't it?
I can't remember exactly, but he did like a Super Bowl spots.
He had a massive campaign going.
Chippy. What was his name?
Chip, what was it?
Wendell Middlebrooks.
But the sad news is we looked it up and wanted to see his career, and he passed away a while ago at a very young age, so I don't know what happened to him, but he was awesome, and he stands out, by the way, in that scene.
He's
funny as hell.
Chip, what were the commercials?
He was Miller High Life TV commercials. He portrayed the delivery man.
I got to tell
you. He had a campaign.
Like a sidebar? Chip is quicker than Stocktip, because that's the fastest research I've ever. So Chip,
Chip Van Groff.
I still have no idea. There's a Glennie description. Did Glennie Balls rebrand himself from something else?
No. But Dave is like, he wants everything to be not cool, but I'm saying, like, you gotta go brand and play your character. Right. Go be Chip Van Groff.
All right. So, and by the way, Glennie Balls does love Entourage and is funny as hell. So, if anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, he's doing better than us.
He's doing a lot better than us. Yes.
Kevin loves this right here. It says Chip because they used to call my grandpappy Chip, and I can't erase that for 14 days.
What do you mean? That's where, Dave? We don't understand what you're saying.
On the description under my name.
In Instagram.
Yeah.
It's so cool, then you got 14 days to decide if you want to go along with that rebrand. But all right, that's it. That wraps up another.
We covered all?
Yeah, we covered it all.
Thanks for having me.
Gary, good insight, as always. Gary's desk finally put to bed.
These ideas are nightmares. The white parents whose worst fear was a child with dyed hair and who likes earrings. Like whatever they say has no bearing. It's so scary in a house that allows.